BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Welcome everyone to another BDNG Meets podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Lead Education and Development Nurse for the BDNG. So today I have great pleasure in introducing Andrew Proctor, who is the Chief Executive of National Eczema Society Charity. So welcome Andrew today to BDNG Meets podcast.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, it's fantastic to be here and it's fantastic to have the opportunity of talking about all things eczema, which is really important and the passion of our everyone in our charity.
Absolutely. And I've had a great pleasure to, you know, be involved with some of your work and we've, you know, worked together over sort of some period of time now. So it's really fantastic. But for our listeners out there today, could you just explain to start with just what actually is the National Eczema Society, when you started and what, you know, what can our listeners achieve and learn about the society?
Sure. We're celebrating our 50th anniversary in 2025. So that's Wow. Our 50th anniversary this year. So we've been going for a very long time. And I suppose that indicates just the challenges people have had to manage their eczema for a very long time as well. And the charity started out through the inspiration of a very dynamic person called Christine Orton, who wrote an open letter to the Guardian newspaper back in 1975, talking about the challenges she was facing in helping her children with eczema, the lack of information. This was a time before the internet and before there was lots of accessible information about eczema and how to manage it. She wrote to the Guardian open letter asking if anyone else was experiencing the same challenges and worries and hopes and everything that we have when we're trying to support a loved one with eczema. And there was a huge response from people. Following the letter, there was an open meeting. Christine lived near London, so the opening meeting was in London. And charity was formed after that, some months after that, the formalities of creating the charity, establishing the charities were made. And it's grown from there. And it started out as essentially a self-help group for people affected by eczema. And a lot of charities, health charities, were formed around that time as membership organisations, as peer support organisations. And that's why there's a lot of health charities with word society in their name. So you have Alzheimer's Society, multiple society, and all the different sororities and societies, and the National Eczema Society was among those. And we still have some of our early supporters and volunteers. In fact, on Saturday, just a couple of days ago, I was in Guildford to attend a talk on the psychosocial impact of eczema, which is often under acknowledged and under recognised. And it was a talk by a clinical psychologist. And it was a group that's been associated with the society for over 40 years, so almost over the full 50 years. So it's amazing that we've had a lot of people who've supported us and been involved and wanted to go on this journey with us for that length of time. So the challenges then are very much the challenges today, though. Eczema is a complex inflammatory condition. It affects our immune system, its genetics, involves our skin barrier, skin microbiome, and the environment, of course. So there's multiple things at play here. And so it's a really hard thing to manage for a lot of people. And the fact that it's a remitting and relapsing condition is a really difficult thing for a lot of people to manage, because they're not sure when the next flare-up is going to kick off. And you're trying to do your best to do everything you're supposed to do and told to do, and still sometimes the flares happen. So it's a really challenging condition. And so our work as a society and as a charity remains to support people in their self-management. So if you're fortunate enough to see a dermatologist or a dermatology nurse clinician, the advisor, or then often you get really good care, and that's our experience and that's the feedback we've got. But there's a lot of people who aren't able to access that, and they manage as best they can in the community, in primary care, and so self-management is a really important thing for a lot of people. And again, talking about some of the events I go to, I went to an event a couple of years ago, and there was a talk about how to manage eczema, and it covered the basics, as well as looking at some of the newer treatments. But a lady came up to me after the event. She said she was 82, so early 80s. And she said, "Oh, I learned so much today. I've had eczema all my life, and I've learned so much today." And I think to myself, how can someone get to that age without properly understanding some of the basics? But I think because eczema for most people is diagnosed when you're a baby, you just pick up things and learn things and are told things along the way, and you find a way of coping. But that's not necessarily accurate, and it's not necessarily as optimal as it could be. So those are things that we consistently come across, I think, as an organization. That's why we put so much time and effort into our information resources.
Absolutely fantastic. And I think as well, I mean, firstly, congratulations on 50 years. That is, you know, is phenomenal. And, you know, it going right back to what you were saying at the beginning there about, you know, somebody approaching the Guardian, you know, and having the difficulties with her child at the time with eczema. I think that's a really important point to make, because, you know, there is challenges and there is restrictions as well, isn't there, with guidelines and what nurses and healthcare professionals can actually access. So I think having an extra resource is so important. So, Andrew, you mentioned there about, you know, the self-help, the work that you do. You mentioned a wee bit about the challenges as well, and it, you know, it resonates as well when you say you met somebody of 82 that, you know, finally got some advice. And that's what we do see in the hospital sometimes, people coming through that are older and should have had this help straight away. So let's go back to the challenges. How do you find it sometimes restrictive in, you know, with developing what you can actually have on your society? What are the challenges you face every day?
So I think the challenge is that the scale of the people in our community, the number of people in our community. So one in five children, one in 10 adults, that's over 5 million adults that will have eczema over their life. And obviously a huge number of children as well. We're a small organization. We have a staff of, you know, a handful of staff, and we're trying to cover a lot of ground to try and make sure that we do what we can to make the biggest impact. And I think when it comes to information, I think people are very frustrated that they're told one thing by one person and then it's another thing by another person. And sometimes the instructions aren't very clear. So, you know, a healthcare professional might say, "We'll use this fingertip unit," but for a lot of people, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So I think the challenge is that a lot of healthcare professionals, because they see many people with eczema and people have had eczema a long time, there's a presumption that patients know everything about it and then it's just a question of managing this flare-up. Mm-hmm. But actually, there could be other things at play here, including things how it's making you feel, the impact on your mental health and your emotional well-being. Again, we have a wonderful advocate who talked who does talk about her experiences of eczema. She's had a really tough time with it. She's had to go to hospital on a number of occasions and been on and tried all sorts of different immunosuppressant treatments. But she said in all her time being treated and cared for with eczema, no one's ever asked her how she's felt about her eczema and how it's impacted. Is there any impact on her emotional well-being or her health, and would she need support with that? So I think there's a lot to try and support people with their eczema. So our website is very large. We have a lot of information on there. We have over 2 million visits a year. So that's a lot of people accessing our information, and it's evidence-based. And I know people use the term evidence-based, but all the content we have is checked and against current guidelines and research evidence to make sure it's accurate and up to date. And we also produce a series of booklets on eczema management, including topics like itching and scratching. And then we have one for children aimed at children, one aimed at adult management, and contact dermatitis and others. And healthcare professionals can order these from us free of charge on our website. They're sent out free of charge. And the idea is that these are resources that healthcare professionals including our wonderful nurses, can and give out to patients to help them self-manage when they walk away from the clinic. Because one of the things I always reflect on is that you see a healthcare professional in clinic for probably a few hours a year, and the rest of the time on those 264 and a half days you're on your own. So it's really important that people have got enough grounding and knowledge to be able to manage as best they can. And that's been my real passion all my time in charities, trying to help people manage and self-manage as effectively as they can.
Absolutely, that's such a good point. And it's really great, to get the resources. I've used the resources myself and in clinic, and, the quality of the resources, like you say, evidence-based as well. And it's really helpful because we are limited in our clinic time. So, to give them another resource is really, really important. So if I hadn't accessed your website today and I was brand new and I was going onto your website, firstly, could you give me the link, and secondly, could you just talk me through what would I find on this website? I know you've discussed some of the points there, but what would I be looking for on this website?
Sure, thank you. Our website address is www.eczema.org, so there's nothing after the org, so it's www.eczema.org, and it's the website of the National Eczema Society. We've got different sections on there on the navigation, so there's a section on information and support, and there's lots and lots of information on things like treatments, so it might be methotrexate or using emollients. We've got information on living with eczema, so things like stress or pregnancy and seasonal change in temperatures. That's always the second most common symptom, reason people say their eczema's flared up. The first one by a long shot being stress. We have information, we have our booklets that you can access on there. We also have content, a series of webinars that we've been running now for some time. And these have been led by our wonderful dermatology nurse advisor, Julie Van Onselen, who's able to present on these and answer questions. And these are a fabulous legacy resource for people, because I know people like to get information in different ways. Some people like reading, some people like listening, some people like listening and looking. So it's really important that we have a range of ways that people can access that information. We also have a big section and a growing section on research, which is very exciting. As a community, it's been hugely frustrating and disappointing that there was very little research in and around eczema for a very long time. And we looked at rather enviously at other therapy areas like psoriasis to see there was a lot of research interest, but the spotlight now is on eczema, and it's really important, and we're so grateful that there's been several new treatments come through in recent years, and the JAK inhibitor treatments, but more so the biologics that came first. So we have different range of options for those people with more severe symptoms, and that can be really difficult for people. So these are providing huge hope and a lifeline to someone who has been struggling often for a very, very long time with trying to manage their symptoms. So we've got a lot going on in research, and as a society, we wanted to make sure that we did our bit and tried to support. So we've been running our own research course. So for the first time for a very long time, we're offering grants for researchers to both to look at trying ways to I suppose discover new things. So we've got innovation grants so people can test ideas. We've got some pump priming grants that we want to use to develop proof of concept and develop some initial data. So that means researchers can then go off and hopefully apply for funds for larger, more substantive projects from other funders. And we also have are offering a PhD studentship as well. So we want to build capacity in the eczema research world, because there's a lot of pharmaceutical company interest at the moment because of these drugs coming through, things that don't have a commercial value, I suppose, or a commercial opportunity, often get lost. So these are things that we want to focus on. And one of the areas that we've asked specifically for applications on this in our current research call is on topical steroid withdrawal, which is we know something is a concern for a lot of people. And part of that challenge is that we don't know enough. So we're again trying to do what we can to stimulate the research into that and develop that understanding.
That's really interesting about the research with topical steroid withdrawal, because it is very, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I think, you know, as a healthcare professional, a lot of nurses, doctors are, you know, questioned on topical steroid use, and, you know, to get correct information out there that people can rely on. And I know when I see a lot of my patients, I do signpost them to your site as well, because it is, you know, it's got some really valuable resources on there. And talking about the research as well, you know, you mentioned grants, PhD, and two questions around the research. Firstly, is like, are nurses allowed to, you know, are these grants open to nurses that are listening today? And secondly, I know you have got our section on for patients to access as well, like, for example, the Mind and Skin. You've got these advertised as well on your website, is that correct?
Yes, so the research core, unfortunately, we're planning on doing this every year, so this is an ongoing commitment from the organisation. We want to stimulate and grow our research activity in the UK. So the deadline for applications for the last round was on the 28th of February. So unfortunately, we'll have to wait until next year. But they're open to anyone who is working or is allied to a university. So that's all we ask, is that there's a university connection there. They're not available to individuals or companies to apply for directly. And on the second point, what we understand and realise is that research takes time. If you want to ask the right question, and then you want to investigate in a way that reflects clinical practice and the way that patients go about their day-to-day trying to manage their eczema, then it's really important to have those insights into the patient insights into the research studies. And that's from the get-go, really, from looking at the initial question through to how the study is designed, and then things like the patient recruitment information. A lot of it comes out and it reads like a bit of a bank document when you're signing to get a new bank account or something. There's a million pages of terms and conditions and those sorts of things, and it can be a bit off-putting for people if you've not come across that before. And I think in some areas, and it still happens, and in the past, most patients in trials or research studies were kind of talked to by a nurse or a doctor in clinic and saying, would you like to take part in this trial? We've got this really interesting research. They could explain it and talk through people's worries and then get them. But often now, trying to get people to engage, if you haven't got that, I suppose, that pipeline of patients locally, it's really hard. So one of the things we've been doing is to promote opportunities for people to get involved in research. And we do that through the information on our website, but we also push out a lot of information on that on social media to try and both raise awareness that this is happening and that people can get involved. And there is a benefit personally often getting involved, because you get access to things, but also you're helping the community at large by being able to develop our understanding. And there's so many things that we don't understand on things like the mind and skin connection. That's a good one. But if you can't get enough people to take part, then these studies are often not as robust as they might be, just because the patient numbers are not what they could and should be. So we see that as a role to be a hub, if you like, in some senses, to try and help. And there's some really, really exciting research projects. I mean, like the Beacon studies, comparing different systemic treatments, and you can self-refer onto that one. There's lots of centres around the UK where you can join and take part. So it's not just in one centre. Often these studies, if you don't live in, I don't know, London or Birmingham or Sheffield or something, then you can't get access to them. But the Beacon study is a really interesting one. I've been personally involved in a project called Biomap, which is a European study looking at the biomarkers for eczema and psoriasis, and looking at how things might, what we can measure and what we can understand that might help us understand someone's disease development. And some people go on to develop quite severe symptoms and disease, and other people don't. And some of those things we don't know why. So looking at genetic investigations and blood tests and all sorts of things, really, really exciting. That's an industry, academic and charity endeavour. And it's a European-wide one. So there's some fantastic European input and brains and energy gone into that. And the final meeting of that's coming up at the end of this month. So we see real hope in the future in a way that possibly there wasn't certainly 5 years ago. So it's a really exciting time for people to feel hope that there was a lot more knowledge and understanding and treatment options coming through.
It's really refreshing, isn't it, as well? I mean, having looked at your website, it's really refreshing for patients to be able to access research like that. I mean, you mentioned there the Beacon and Mind and Skin and the Biomap. And I think it's, you know, it's getting away from that traditional being seen in the hospital, you're rushed, being seen in the GP practice, you're rushed by, you know, possibly consenting when you're feeling quite stressed over, you know, by a research nurse or some healthcare professional. So I think it's really refreshing for a patient to be able to go onto your site, absorb the information at the sort of, you know, time and actually be able to, you know, access research and be part of it, because that really does benefit an awful lot of patients. And I do feel as well, you know, having worked in quite a lot of aspects of research, it's really fantastic, you know, that recruitment, you must make a big difference to recruitment as well. It's really exciting.
Yeah, we do get good feedback from researchers, and we work closely. We can't work with everyone, and we haven't got resources, but the ones that we feel are either are particularly innovative or are might struggle otherwise, or you know, there's a particular connection there. It's really important. We've established what we call an expert by experience group for people with expert, and we've got about 25 people on the group. We had our inaugural meeting yesterday actually, and it was just so fantastic to meet people who are really committed, often struggling with a difficult expert for a long time, but they want to get involved, they want to have their voice heard, they want to make sure that we're doing the right things and things that are going to make the biggest difference. And it was the positive energy in the room, well, it was a virtual room obviously, but the positive energy in the room was just amazing, and I was humbled by it, I have to say. Having, you know, I've been working in charities now for a very long time, I've been very fortunate to lead the National Expert Society for 7 years, and I do feel that there's, as a patient community, people in our the eczema world just don't have the voice and that is warranted and is needed to make sure that you know, that we can make real progress.
Absolutely, it's really, really very positive. The work that you do is phenomenal. So we've talked a wee bit now, you know, the resources that are available and some fantastic topics on there, both to healthcare professionals and patients as well. We've talked about the webinars, which is fantastic. I've got a wee question about the webinars, which I'll get back to. We've talked about the research as well. Just in regards to the webinars, how often are the webinars available? Are they recorded? Are they on your site as well? So people, if they miss them, they could log into these webinars?
Sure. We have run a series of webinars ourselves. And as I said, they have been presented by Julie Van Onselen, who's done just an amazing job, both presenting and answering a whole plethora of questions, which is not easy on the hoof. For each of the subjects, so each of the topics we cover, we do two different events at different times, so people have an opportunity of attending live, so they're replicated but at different times. But one of those will be recorded and then saved on our YouTube page. So we have a YouTube page, search for National Expert Society. So those webinars are recorded and then saved on there. On that YouTube page, National Expert Society YouTube page, we also have a number of other things, like very soon we're going to pop up the talk that was given on Saturday, I mentioned, on psychosocial impact of eczema by a wonderful talk by Dr. Ella Guest. So that was filmed and it was live streamed, so people can actually see it on our Facebook page, but we're also going to do a recording and have it on our YouTube page as well, because I think that becomes then a resource for people to access. And we know nurses and other healthcare professionals do view, because I occasionally get emails saying, oh, can we have some CPD points for doing this, and unfortunately we're not registered. These are our events that are aimed at people with eczema, so they're not geared at healthcare professionals, but a lot of the information, because it's evidence-based and it's very rigorous and thorough, I think is a good grounding for someone if they're looking for that, if they're a healthcare professional as well.
Absolutely, a very valuable resource. And YouTuber, I didn't actually realise you were on YouTube, so that's a really good point and very easy to access as well. That's fantastic. And Julie is, I mean, you know, she has such knowledge, and I know Julie quite well. So, you know, again, she's a very good speaker and has worked, you know, many years in eczema field, definitely. So we've talked a wee bit about the webinars, and I just want to go back. You said you had a fantastic meeting there and everyone was enthusiastic, you know, a lot of voices in the room. What about patient voices? Do you have many patients in your team or that speak for you? How does that work, Andrew?
Without wanting to share, you know, private medical information, some in our team and have personal lived experience of eczema. We have a board of trustees, so our trustees provide the strategic leadership and governance, oversee the governance of the organisation of our charity. Many of those have eczema or certainly strong connections with eczema. And then we have we have a medical advisory board as well, chaired by Dr. Celia Moss. Those are healthcare professionals, but some of those have eczema as well. So, but they certainly all have an interest in eczema and the improving the lives of those in our community. So we do. But when it comes to speaking about eczema, it can be quite hard because it's very revealing talking about something that's very personal. If you're sharing pictures of your skin when it's flaring, if you're turning up an event and you feel self-conscious because your skin is flaring or particularly around the face, our resources and information on facial eczema is the most common accessed information on our website. Is the most downloads. We have a whole bunch of fact sheets, over 30 fact sheets on different topics and so on. And the facial eczema fact sheet is the one that's the most popular by some margin. But it's very revealing. So it's not for everyone. And sometimes people are in a better place to talk about it if they want to talk to the media, for example, or go to an event. If your eczema's settled down at that point, then you feel more able to. But sometimes, if it's flaring, it's just too much. So, but we do have a number of people. We're super fortunate, and we're enormously grateful for them to speak at events. And one of our wonderful patient advocates, Kim Dawson, is speaking at a BDNG event coming up on the Eczema Masterclass in March. And when you hear people talk about just the impact on your day-to-day, because the kind of superficial public understanding of eczema is that it's just a rash and you know, a bit of cream, it'll go away essentially. And like a lot of misconceptions, there's some truth in that. For some people, that might be the case if you have very mild symptoms. But for those who don't, and there are so many people in that position, eczema can take over your life. It has an impact on your physical health, on your mental health, on your emotional well-being, your social isolation, your even your life chances sometimes. We did a survey a few years ago, and the report was called Eczema Masked, and the impact on people's mental health. Mm-hmm. And that was 500 adults and 500 parents of children, so it was a big sample size. It was huge. It was huge. Yeah. And I think that's, again, something that we want to raise more awareness of and help.
Yeah, it is really, I think it's really difficult, isn't it, for patients sometimes to open up, because, you know, possibly they've been waiting so long for this appointment, and, you know, possibly they're late because they can't get parked the car and they're stressed. You know, a lot of people don't like hospitals or GP practices. They feel quite nervous. So, you know, and you will get healthcare professionals as well, very much concentrating on the skin, which obviously is very important, but you've got an individual person in front of you. And I think, you know, what you're talking about there is the importance of the psychological facts of this patient, and, you know, underlying they could have, you know, issues with anxiety, depression. It impacts the whole mind, and I think that's the importance of mind and skin. We're starting to link everything up, so you know, so there's a lot of work to be done around that area. So I think, you know, with your society, Andrew, taking it forward and, you know, focusing on the psychological aspects of patients, and really providing this sort of holistic vision really of eczema and the patient and how it affects them is just so important. So when it comes to the psychological aspects, you mentioned you had a person speaking for you. Do you have any resources on that on your website as well about psychological help or, you know, certain aspects that you could help a patient with?
Yes. So we do have some resources. We've got some information on how to manage stress. So stress is always the most common reason people cite as for eczema flare-ups. And it's difficult because you can't avoid stress in lice. And we often have people come to us at their wit's end, things like exam time or moving house or getting married or starting a new job or moving area. All these things can be very difficult life experiences or challenging that are stressful. And then suddenly the eczema kicks off again. We do have some information, but we don't have enough. And one of the things that we'd like to see more of is more studies on things like acceptance and commitment therapy, which we know have worked well for some people, but the studies that have been done are relatively small. But if we could make sure that there was better evidence for these and or stronger evidence for these and more people's ability to access the services more, because often it's very patchy about what you can access as well. In England, the NHS talking therapies, you can self-refer. So it depends on how it's well resourced actually in your own locality. But there are ways and means of trying to access some of these things that we know have been really helpful. Basic CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is quite good. But if we can develop something that's specific for someone with a long-term remitting, relaxing, complex condition that can really play with your head, then I think those sorts of things would be hugely valuable, because I think there's a validating aspect to this in terms of, so you're not going mad with this. It's what happens to a lot of people. It's just one of those things. But equally, it gives you the tools then to self-manage more effectively. And I think, you know, so many more people would benefit from that. It's not specific to psychosocial interventions, but NASS Eczema Society was involved in an international project with a number of with charities in a number of countries, including the US and Germany and Canada, Australia, Denmark, Spain, and others, looking at different measures of patient satisfaction, eczema patient satisfaction, on different things like satisfaction with treatments and education and so on. And the UK, we always think that we're pretty good at things and we do a good job and we try hard, absolutely. And everyone's, you know, in our dermatology world, I think, is really well-intentioned. But when you look at the measures, the UK came the lowest on virtually all of those. One of them was on patient education. And you look at, and the proxy question for that was, were you asked, were you given any instructional information on your last visit to your healthcare professional? And the UK came the lowest on that. So that's just a reflection, I think, of how much we need to do more to try and support people. And one of them is access to psychosocial interventions like CBT. And it's great that things like the talking therapies you can access. Because as you say, some people feel awkward about it, and a lot of doctors don't want to open that can of worms because they think, yeah, it's going to take ages and they haven't got time and there isn't much they can do and the waiting list for counsellors locally is as long as your arm, all those sorts of things. So it's almost like just parked away. But actually, it's what bothers a lot of people a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we see this very often, you know, a lot of patients really do struggle, you know, relationships, working. I had a patient the other day even saying, you know, it's difficult to go on a bus, these things, and it's things that we take for granted every day. So talking therapies is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we do definitely, you know, advocate that to patients. You know, we definitely refer patients, you know, the details of talking therapies so they can refer themselves. It's absolutely fantastic. But I think, again, sometimes we need more resources, don't we? So if talking, yeah, therapies maybe is not the best for this particular patient, they've got access to something else. Like you say, you've taught there about CBT, you know, fantastic. It can work really, really well. But again, having time to talk about that can be very, very difficult. Whereas if you've got the resources that you can signpost a patient to, it can make such an impact, such a difference. And I feel, Andrew, when you, even if you're signposting, that can make such an impact on a patient, because they feel valued. And yes, they understand we've got time restrictions, but, you know, to have another resource when they go home is very, very valuable for a patient. Absolutely. So, wow, it sounds like you are a very busy gentleman.
Well, it's not just me. We have a fantastic team. We have wonderful trustees. We have a very supportive medical advisory board, including a number of wonderful nurses, and obviously all our patient advocates and supporters. So it's there's a lot of people wanting to, you know, move forward and help us progress in terms of how we can support and make lives better for our wonderful eczema community. And that actually, that takes us on to the third strand. So the National Eczema Society has three key areas of activity. One is our information advice, which we've talked about. It's really important to help people understand what's going on in their skin and manage their eczema and their eczema flare-ups effectively. The other area is research and research support, and because it's such a complex condition, there's so much we still don't know, it's really important we get more research, particularly in those areas that don't have the same commercial interest, because otherwise they often get just not looked at enough. But the third area is advocacy or campaigning, and the challenge is that we can do initiatives locally. So you might do a fantastic initiative in a hospital or in a GP practice or in a trust or in a clinical commissioning area, but often those don't get replicated across our health system. And there are so many challenges, and one of them, as an example, is the waiting list for a dermatology appointment if you have an inflammatory condition like eczema or psoriasis. And because of the importance and priority of investigating skin lesions, then often those dermatology waiting times get long, and I can't tell you how deflating and demoralizing it is to have had waited 9 months and then to have a letter a couple of weeks before saying, I'm sorry, we've got to bump your appointment because we're busy with other things, essentially. And that is just, it just feels so unfair. And because people have been referred because they're really struggling and in a really bad way. And it's like, you know, if you had bad kidney disease and you were referred, you wouldn't be expecting to wait 9 months for an appointment and then told it's going to take another 3 months. So we feel as it's not right and not appropriate for people with suffering severe symptoms to have to wait for that long to get any sort of treatment. And it's psychologically, it's so damaging and so challenging for people to have to manage that. And, you know, if you are able to, you know, I will say that we don't have a shortage of dermatology, we have a shortage of dermatology working in the NHS, because if you have the financial world wherewithal, then you have access to private care and you get that quickly. But for people who don't, then you are reliant on the NHS service, and it's really, really difficult to have to wait that long. I was involved very gratefully representing National Eczema Society in an initiative called the NHS Outpatient Transformation Programme. So this was looking at dermatology outpatient transformation. This was looking at how to try and address the waiting lists that had built up over COVID, the COVID period, and generally work more effectively. And part of that is that the number of people coming in for skin lesions or skin lesion assessment is taking up a lot of the system's resource and capacity. I was chatting to someone, I won't say went to hospital, but they work at a senior dermatologist, been there a very long time. 85% of the skin lesions that she sees from people are benign. So 85% of the people. So you could argue, well, those should have been better diagnosed at primary care level rather than just bumping up for someone else to take another view on it. I think there are systemic changes and improvements that we need to make a real difference, to either build release capacity in the dermatology system and or prioritize those with inflammatory skin diseases. And Again, it was a cosmetics company. I won't give the name, but they have an app, and you can take a photo of your skin as a customer of their products, and then very quickly you'll get a report on your skin saying what the state of it is and what you might do to make it better. And there's obviously a link to their website where you can buy their products. The guy, when he was telling me about this, said that they'd had over 5,000 scans or images of skin and had them read by dermatologists to come up with the back end knowledge base to drive this app. And that was some years ago. Now you can do that in 2 seconds with AI. So there are real opportunities now to improve the system that we have to release capacity. And we need leaders who are going to take the graft the nettle and really run with this. And I know there are clinical concerns about AI and how accurate it is versus an individual and so on. But I think these are all things that can be worked out. But I think anything that will help routine assessment to release capacity in the system, so people with more complex conditions that can't be sorted with a scan of the skin and an AI, then they need to have, and we need to have more priority in the system. So those are things that I think are really exciting because technology is driving that. But this third strand of work that we do at National Eczema Society, advocacy, there are other things. So for example, we cannot understand, as an organisation that's been going for 50 years, with 8 million people affected by eczema, that there are no NICE, National Institute of Care and Health Excellence, there are no NICE guidelines on eczema diagnosis and management for adolescents and adults. And the reality of that is that if there's no NICE guidelines that can be used as the benchmark for good resourcing, good practice, best care and so on, then you're going to get this massive disparity of care across the UK. And we see this. There was a report a couple of years ago led by a very eminent dermatologist called Nick Lavelle, called the Getting It Right First Time. And through various FOI requests and things, the difference in the resourcing locally and the experience if you have eczema of depending on where you live was huge, and the same goes in primary care. So we can't understand why NICE is just not listening. They're happy to do lots of other things, but they just ignore the eczema community, and we feel it's really frustrating that this reflects a general position amongst the healthcare professional community more broadly, and certainly in policy areas, that that dermatology isn't that important and eczema is not that important. People don't die from it, so it's not that important. And I've been to meetings at the MHRA and at NICE and various, and the level of complacency verging on arrogance about this is just maddening. I cannot tell you how maddened I am at some of these meetings where it's just trivialized. And so part of our role, I think, as an organization, again, is to try and advocate for systemic changes, system changes, and to make sure that things that we think can make a difference and improve things happen. And an example of that is we pushed with a number of different other organisations, and we're very grateful for the BDNG support as well on this, to push the medicines regulator, the MHRA, to introduce strength labelling on topical steroids. So 11 million tubes of this treatment are prescribed or used in the UK every year, and until the last year when the MHRA agreed to mandate this, so basically requiring the pharmaceutical companies to add it, there was no reference to how strong the steroid was on either the tube or the packet or the patient information leaflet. And people get mixed up. I mean, we have people, some get mixed up between emollients and steroids, let alone between different steroids. If you're given a mild one for your face and a stronger one for your other areas of your body, then people just get confused. And I think the only reason it wasn't on there is just because it wasn't thought that that was helpful or necessary when these things were introduced back in the day in the 1780s, actually, so or even earlier. So so those are things that we think will help give patients confidence in using their using these treatments effectively, particularly when there's a lot of noise around topical cell withdrawal and people are worried about that. And as I've said before, we don't have enough information to fully understand that, but we know it does affect some people and it can be really, really distressing and difficult. So that's an example of where we were able to do that. There was no question that this was a bad thing. So all the organizations who supported it thought it was a good idea. All the nurses and the doctor, the healthcare professionals, the patients overwhelmingly thought this was a good idea. It still took a lot of pushing to actually get this through and for the MHRA to make this change. But it's the first in the world. We're really pleased about that. We think it's really important that patients are given enough information to use them properly, because for the vast majority of those in our eczema community, if they don't use steroids to manage a flare-up, there isn't really another option. And so you either go with eczema uncontrolled, and that can be really distressing and difficult, and especially with children, or use these steroids. And we want people to use them effectively and not just use them, because you know, people are asked to use them once a day for 5 days or 7 days, and people say, well, I was a bit worried about them, so I only used half the amount, so I only used it for 3 days, and it seemed to be getting better, so I stopped using them. But actually, if you don't use them as prescribed and as advised, then often that you're not getting the benefit. So you've got the worst of all worlds. So you're using them, worrying about them, but they're not having the benefit that they could otherwise have. So that's another example, and we're really keen to push to make these changes and push for things like NICE guidelines to make sure that that there's enough, that we can make changes in the system that's going to help a lot of people, I suppose.
That's fantastic progress, what you've done. The systemic challenges out there are, you know, they do put a lot of barriers in a way, you know, both to healthcare professional and patients as well, which, you know, is soul destroying. It can be very, very difficult for patients to, like we say, even access, you know, the correct care in a way. And, you know, not to have the specific guidelines as well, it's very, very frustrating. And obviously, you know, as a healthcare professional, a lot of people feel the same way. I think, to be positive, what you've, you know, helped with the corticosteroids and the labeling has been phenomenal. It just makes such a difference. And I know as a clinician, you know, you could maybe be prescribing different ones for the face, you know, the body, you know, like you say, the emollients, and not to have that confusion, because these names sometimes can be more difficult, you know, for a patient as well to even absorb. And yes, we can write it on the letter, but again, it just makes such a difference that, you know, you've got the labeling correct now. And there is posters as well available, isn't there? Can we get them from your website, Andrew, just with the different or is that
We're on a bit of a pause our website with our posters. So healthcare professionals can order our booklets. There's an order form on our website. So you just go on there. If you go on www.eczema.org, you'll find it as a healthcare professional in the section that says for healthcare professionals. We don't have posts at the moment. We're redoing them at the moment, actually, but they will be coming through later in the year, because often we find that in clinics it's difficult to put things up in, because there's different rules and regulations in different places, and you have to put them in boards and get permissions and blah blah blah. But it is nice to have that, just to give people to help raise awareness. So we do appreciate it, certainly.
Yeah, we've definitely used it. I think the BAD have got a section on this as well. And what we did, again, the rules and regulations to put posts up, we do not put them in the waiting areas anymore or anything like this. But, you know, in our office, where the new doctors are coming through as well, new nurses. And I think it's a really valuable resource, because actually even to learn all the names of all these steroids is difficult. And then you've got different strengths on top of that. And it was very, very tricky, whereas this has made a massive impact on like say both healthcare professional and the patients as well. It makes it much, much easier for them. And I think as well, sometimes GPs, when, you know, if you're not using these medications, these topical treatments all the time, again, it's just giving them a bit more security and, you know, information as well on what we're actually trying to prescribe for patients. So yeah, I think progress there has been phenomenal, and I would congratulate your team on, you know, helping to achieve that. Definitely, it's an absolute bonus for us as in the healthcare professional world. So congratulations for your 50 years again, and
thank
congratulations
you
for all the work. I mean, it's phenomenal what you've done, like you've said, you know, split it into three sections there with the resources, the webinars, the resources for patients can access, you know, to do their own self-care, the psychological, the research, and then even taking it further forward to help with certain you know, challenges as well that we are faced with eczema. So it's a phenomenal amount of work that you all do, and it's always fantastic to work with you guys. And you did mention that you are going to be speaking for us along with one of your colleagues as well on our 24th of March 2025, and that's the AD Masterclass. This is the first of many, because Andrew is a well-known face to the BDNG, and we usually have the support in our other conferences as well. So I'd like to say a massive thank you, Andrew. I could speak to you a lot more, but it will be the first of many, I'm sure. Just, Andrew, before you go, could you just repeat the link for your website just for our listeners today as well?
Certainly, thank you. It's been wonderful to talk with you and share some of our experiences here at National Eczema Society. So our website address is www.eczema, for those who struggle with the spellings, I know some people do, .org. So www.eczema.org. And you can also sign up for our email newsletters, which are free. We send these out regular updates, and we have quite an active social media presence. So you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook and X and LinkedIn if that's how you like to get your news.
That's fantastic. Lots of valuable resources there. And as I would also say to our listeners today as well, it's a really valuable resource for our patients to access some of the information that's on there and the research as well. It's absolutely fantastic. So thank you again, Andrew. Thank you for this fantastic podcast and all the information. And I look forward to working with you very soon.
Thank you very much. It's been really enjoyable chatting, and I hope everyone who might listen to this finds it helpful as well. So, and please do get in touch if you think we can do anything with you with the charity. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you from the BDNG.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.